Patrick.
Hey, man, how are you?
Hey, what's going on, man?
Not too much. You got some time?
Yeah. I'm stuck in traffic.
Oh, good. That's typical California-ness, right?
Yeah, it's L.A. So, you're in Richmond now, right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, so you probably don't have to deal with too much of the traffic thing there.
Not traffic. It's a lot mellower down here, you know.
What made you want to move to Richmond?
I moved down here with a veil, actually, when we left Reston, we moved to Richmond, and I came down here with them.
Okay, so you were actually playing in the band when they made that move.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Like my senior year, they were talking about moving down here, and I was playing in Remission, and they asked me to join the band, and what we did was DJ, who was playing bass for Avail at the time, switched with me, and he started playing bass for Remission, because we all sort of knew Remission was going to dissolve at the end of after school, and DJ wasn't interested in moving to Richmond, and I was definitely interested in playing with those guys, so we just switched for the senior year. Does that make sense?
Sort of. I guess it totally made sense to you guys at the time. It's just anybody from outside of this scene who hears that must think that you guys are crazy.
Well, it was a good solution, and you know, the way I remember it, everybody was happy about it, you know, so it worked well for everybody, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, I watched recently the Jam for Man 4 video, and
yeah.
And so DJ was already playing bass with them, I guess, when that video takes place.
Yeah, that was Dave and I's senior year, and it's funny because I've watched the Instagram one you posted, which has Dave and I singing together on it, and it reminded me that DJ had was already playing bass. Yeah.
Yeah, you guys you guys look really close.
him and I and a guy named San were really tight at the time for sure. Yeah.
I've talked to Dan, but I have, and not for the show, but, you know, just over the years. But I haven't talked to Dave at all. What's his story? What happened to him after high school?
Well, he moved to Dave, when he graduated, he moved to Florida and went to school at a place called Flagler. And then when Brian decided not to move to Richmond to join up with Avail, we played as a three-piece very briefly, with Tim playing drums and singing, me playing bass, and Joe doing some vocals and guitar. But we really decided it didn't work, and we asked Dave to move to Richmond to join Avail. So when he left high school, he moved to Florida, stayed there for a little while. Then he moved to Richmond when him and I played in Avail for a while. It only lasted a few months that way. We played two or three shows. And then him and I both left Avail and Richmond, moved back to Northern Virginia, and we packed everything we owned into a small minivan, and we drove around the country for a little while, and we did some traveling. And then the last I saw Dave, I had moved back to Richmond, and he came to visit me, and he was doing some backpacking and things like that. And I've tried to get in touch with him over the years, but I haven't been able to get a hold of him. From what I can tell, he has, become a professor and had lived out in Arizona and done some things like that. But I haven't been in touch with him. I know he's written a book about like a nature book, and that's all I know. I haven't been able to get a hold of him.
What did you guys do when you were kind of like traveling around? Where did you go?
Well, we started in Reston, and we kind of went north, went up through the Catskills, and did some backpacking and stuff like that, and then traveled, you know, across the top of the country, you know, down through across Canada, down through Michigan, and we went out to we got as far as Colorado, and in Colorado we decided to divide, and he kept going, and I drove home. We just were traveling, enjoying it, trying to, you know, I think I read Jack Kerouac's On the Road and decided that's what I was going to do.
What did you learn from that experience?
Man, I don't know. Not, you know, we had some fun, and it was tough, and it lasted about a month and a half, and I came home.
I guess you learned that, you know, traveling by van can be pretty tough.
I learned that I had a headache the whole time, and I was not getting somehow missing some kind of nutrition, and I was miserable, you know. And we didn't have a whole lot of fun, to be honest. It wasn't all we thought it was going to be.
Well,
anyway.
That happens sometimes. Some travels and some trips aren't the reality of them isn't as romantic as the idea of them.
Right, right.
So taking it way back, because when it comes to you and all the different like bands and things that you were a part of, I kind of want to get the chronology right. did you grow up in Reston? Were you born and raised in Reston?
No, well, I was born in Buffalo, but we moved to Reston when I was four. So for the most part, yes.
And what part of Reston did you live in?
I lived on, you know where Highs was?
Yeah, sure, Soapstone.
Soapstone, yeah. I lived in Hearthstone Court, which was right up the hill from Highs. And then, like, my junior year, we moved to Lake Ann, and I lived in Waterview Cluster, which is, you know, right off of Lake Ann. That's where my parents still live today.
And what was like your crew of kids that you hung out with back in those places?
Yeah. So mostly, you know, we hung out at South Lake Village Center a lot. We just rode skateboards, and, you know, that turned into playing some music. And we just, you know, that's what we did. Kind of found punk rock and abandoned organized sports and started playing music and riding skateboards.
How did you kind of discover music?
Yeah, yeah. So, there was a kid named Kip who had a skateboard ramp in his backyard, and he had an older brother, and I borrowed a Black Flag, My War, and Dead Kennedys' Holiday in Cambodia police truck 45. I borrowed those, and I really liked them. And that's kind of where the interest in punk rock started. that and The Clash and PIL. Yeah, so, you know, I kind of found it through that. And then riding skateboards, we liked Thrasher magazine and found ads for Discord Records and things like that in Thrasher magazine, and we would, you know, order some music out of that.
What was the first instrument you got?
Bass. Bo, when I was in hostile environment, Bo left his bass at my house one summer, and I just started writing some songs on that and playing around with it. And a lot of that stuff ended up being some of the later hostile environment songs and then some of the early Remission songs.
So you kind of yada yada being in hostile environment there.
That was just because that wasn't an instrument. I mean, you know,
yeah.
It's the hostile environment. I was a singer, and you know, I think we listened to punk rock and rode skateboards, and we decided, hey, we could do this, you know. And I don't really recall how I connected. I don't really recall how I connected with Ben and Matt, but those two were friends, and I was somehow at the time running around with Joe Banks, who was in a band at the time called Sleestacks. And I knew Ben wanted to be a drummer, and we got a hand-me-down drum set from the drummer of Sleestacks, a guy named Doug Crosby. And Matt's older brother was a bass player, or had a bass, so Matt borrowed that bass. And you know, old amps had two inputs on them. So we plugged his bass into one side, and we plugged an old busted microphone that Joe Banks gave us into the other side. And we bought this drum set from Doug Crosby, and when we just started playing. And then eventually we connected with Jason Radley, who was, you know, he was more into, you know, rock and roll, Led Zeppelin and stuff like that, but he knew how to play his instrument, which was a big plus. So somehow we wrangled him in, and there we were writing little, you know, I think we were probably 14 years old writing, you know, little minute and a half, little punk rock songs. And eventually we had six or eight of them, and we decided to play them in front of people, you know?
Other Reston bands performing, like, had you seen Sleestacks and Pudwack play?
No, I never saw Pudwack play. I'd heard about them, and ironically, when I was in eighth grade, I would be sitting in art class, And this crazy looking punk dude would walk by the window every day. And I was like, man, who is that guy? And it turned out somebody told me that it was Andy Bunn. And I think he was in that band Pudwack. And I used to see him walking by, but I don't know why that's relevant. But no, I never saw those bands. Joe, I don't know how Joe and I became friends, but Joe was really, really helpful to Hostile Environment. You know, he got us a practice space. We practiced at his girlfriend's house, a girl named Betsy Nord. We practiced at her house. And, you know, we practiced probably 3 or 4 days a week for a couple hours after school when we weren't riding skateboards. We were practicing. And, you know, Joe loaned us, like, Joe gave me this old broken microphone that I had to, like, hold my finger on the tip, on the top of it in order for it to work. But, so he was pretty instrumental in us getting started because he loaned us some gear and sort of, you know, he also got us our first show. We opened up for Slee Stacks, like, on a Friday afternoon at a school called Gonzaga. And I think a couple of the guys from Slee Stacks went to Gonzaga, and that's how we ended up playing there.
What were the Reston shows that you played like?
Yeah, and then we started playing, you know, LDK was around also, and then some of the other earlier, you know, Reston bands, and we just started playing in people's garages. You know, unfortunately, most of the time when parents were out of town, and I mean, in retrospect, man, I can't believe the cops didn't turn up to more of those things, which they did turn up to some of them. But, you know, for example, we played in Fan's basement once. So there's a recording of that. I think that's one of the good early recordings of Hostile Environment that's around. That was a fun show. That was in, you know, that was in Fan's basement. And we played a bunch of shows in people's basements, you know, when parents were out of town. And then actually there was a couple of twins named Hallie and Whitney, and their parents were nice enough to have us actually play in their garage when they were home. And those were some great shows, you know. Psychotic Symptoms, I think, played a couple of those, and maybe A Veil and LDK. And I think maybe FSA or one of the early Northside bands played at that one, too, with Dave Stone.
What do you remember from those times, like those shows? What do you remember the feeling being like?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty special, you know. It was pretty unique stuff, I think, in retrospect. I mean, I don't know that we knew it at the time, how kind of special and unique it was, but I just remember enjoying it, having a good time, and there was a little, I suppose there was also a little bit of fear of getting in trouble from the cops showing up and stuff like that, you know. But,
I'm sure you were already dealing with that, like, skating all over the place anyway.
Yeah. I suppose conflicts with cops and Reston weren't very rare, you know?
Right.
South Lake Village Center, they didn't like us hanging around there either, so they gave us a hard time about that too.
So what kind of happened with hostile environment to make you sort of go to remission?
Yeah, well, let's see. What happened? Let's see. I think we started, you know, Matt moved away and Bo Butler started playing bass, who eventually was, you know, a big part of the Veil. And I think my lyrics were moving more towards like straight edge kind of stuff, and my attitude was leaning that way. And I think Ben and Jason were leaning in other directions. And I think it just sort of, you know, I think we grew apart. How about that? Does that make sense?
Yeah, except for that, you know, Jason was part of Remission, right?
Yeah, that's true. He was. But I guess we just, I don't know, the connection just wasn't really there anymore. I don't really recall exactly what went down, but I think it was related to the fact that we sort of just started moving in different directions. There wasn't some major blow-up or anything like that that made it fall apart. I think we just kind of moved in different directions.
So it wasn't you wanting to, you know, like, play more in terms of playing more bass or anything like that?
Well, no, I don't think it was, but I mean, I think it was sort of a natural progression, you know, from kind of moving away from singing, because I think early on with Hostile Environment, it was just the idea of, I just sort of landed as the singer, which, you know, I don't know. I'm not so sure I was all that good at it. I think I was better off playing bass. So in Hostile Environment, the energy was there to, like, get something going, and I think it just sort of eventually morphed into something where I was, you know, more writing more stuff and doing, you know, not singing anymore, if that makes any sense.
Well, yeah. Remission definitely has a very different sound than Hostile Environment also.
Yeah.
Whereas Hostile Environment definitely still harkens back to those punk roots that you were kind of talking about earlier with Black Flag.
Yep.
Remission sort of hints at what's to come in terms of the rest of the 90s. It's certainly more going toward a more alternative sound. Alternative.
Yeah.
Although,
it's funny because it's...
I hate all those monikers, alternative, grunge, you know, it's hard to know what to call anything.
Right. I understand what you're saying, but I mean, it's funny because you sent me a couple of the Remission songs also, and in listening to them, I'm like, man, it's way more rock than it felt like at the time. You know, at the time, it still felt like, you know, I mean, our roots were definitely still in punk rock. At least mine and Dave's were, but, you know, there were bands like 7 Seconds at the time that were, you know, kind of mellowing a little bit, you know, and getting a little bit more rock, I guess, to take, you know, a little less punk and a little more rock maybe. And I think we had some influences in there from that. And the other thing I think is just that, you know, Andre was such an incredible drummer that I think he just tightened everything up. And I think with Andre, Jason sort of flourished a little bit more too and was able to explore something more than bar chords. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And that, you know, so I think maybe, you know, those influences started to kind of show through a little bit more in Remission than they did in Hostile Environment with Jason. And Andre's just, I mean, the guy was just he was a rock, you know? And I don't think that we were necessarily accustomed, punk rock bands weren't necessarily accustomed to such a precise drummer, you know? So I think Andre made us all sound good.
Well, between Andre and Jason, you know, you have two really great musicians.
Yeah, definitely.
And so, you know, even if you're new to the bass somewhat, as long as you can follow what Andre's doing and sort of be the glue in there, you know, between them, you're going to have something special.
I don't know how we quite connected with Andre even. I mean, Andre also grew up in Hearthstone Court. Or he lived there at some point. I don't know if he, early on he had lived there. But we were kind of friends, but not tight or anything. And I remember being at a football game at South Lakes High School, and they had the marching band, you know, and this dude, you know, the guy who's got the three drums in front of him,
uh-huh,
in the marching band.
Yeah.
Well, that was Andre, and he drove that whole band. I mean, it was like he did such an incredible job in that marching band. I was like, man, I'd love to get that guy in our, you know, to play with us, you know. And it turned out he played a drum kit also, and I had a bunch of experience with some go-go bands. It's funny because in listening to his interview, it almost sounded like he put his go-go experience after Remission. But to my memory, his go-go stuff was before Remission, and he had a sort of experience being involved in like a tight band, you know, and I think it really rubbed off on us, if that makes any sense. You know, but there was another band that he played with that, you know, that had done, I can't remember what they were called, but they had done some big shows with some of the bigger DC go-go bands, you know. I can't remember what the name of the band was, but I know that he had played shows with, you know, some of those bigger go-go bands. Like, I think there was a band called Unity that was a go-go band, and Junkyard Band, I think they were called.
Yeah.
Kind of the really early go-go. So I don't know if I'm remembering it wrong or not, but I remember that Andre was involved in some go-go stuff before Remission. And he was, you know, he had been turned on to some of the, some punk rock stuff, you know, and sort of fit right in, you know. He was a fantastic drummer, you know.
In terms of Remission, did you guys all write songs together, or did you bring some of, you know, like you said, the stuff that you had been writing on bass?
The way I remember it, typically Jason or I would come in with, you know, maybe a riff or a couple of riffs that we thought would go together, and the other person would write a part over that riff, and Andre would write a drum part to it, and we would just sort of flesh it out in practice. The songs weren't really, like, nailed down before you showed up for practice. I would say that most of the songs were written in practice. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the best way to write those songs.
I totally agree. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that was definitely a good part of the process for us.
Although sometimes if you know you have a band where you're not really comfortable about everything going on, then you know the song can get carried away from you, especially if you don't have a strong idea of what the song is, and then, you know, can wind up being something else that you didn't want it to be. But, you know.
Yeah, I've never really been involved. I mean, almost, I can't think of a single band that I've been in that wasn't like a collective songwriting process, you know? Other than maybe, you know, the early Avail stuff that was written before I was in the band, that where I had to, you know, show up and learn the songs, learn the parts, you know. But other than that one situation, I can't think of another band where I didn't collectively write the songs in with the other members, you know.
So when you joined Avail, what was the lineup of Avail?
Tim on drums, Ryan singing, Joe playing guitar, and me playing bass.
Okay. And what do you think of that lineup as opposed to, because you were involved in, you know, like you said, a bunch of different lineups in Avail.
Yeah, a few, yeah. That was a good one, you know. We had a lot of fun. I really only wrote probably 4 or 5 songs over the course of playing with them. But, yeah, we had a lot of fun. And then when Brian decided not to move down to Richmond with us, you know, we tried to get it together, but it just wasn't working out. And eventually we just weren't getting along, you know, is what it came down to. Tim and Joe – and I and Dave just weren't all getting along, so Dave and I decided to leave. But, you know, and eventually, obviously, they turned into quite a band, man. They really pulled it off, you know?
Yeah.
Well, as everybody knows.
What were the 4 or 5 songs that you wrote with them?
Twisted. And March. I think both of those songs are on Satiate. Yeah.
how did you feel? Were you involved with, like, actually putting Satiate out?
No, uh-uh. No, I was already gone by then.
So what did you think when you heard that stuff?
Oh, man, I was totally impressed. But not surprised, you know. When I moved, and then I moved to Chicago eventually, and I saw on a flyer that Avail was playing at this place called the Fireside Bowl, and I hadn't really been in touch with those guys in a long time, so I just went to the show. I mean, their shows were freaking amazing, man. I mean, there was 500 kids in there, and I think it was 120 degrees in there. There was like sweat dripping off the ceiling, you know? I mean, it was insane, you know? They really did have a fantastic energy, you know?
Yeah. No, they lit the place on fire.
Yeah, yeah.
Whenever they played.
It was great.
But, you know, there's a certain part of me, I mean, you've got it even more. There was a certain part of me where it was just like such rest and pride, you know, to know that these guys came from the same town that I came from, you know?
Right, right. And, yeah, that is pretty cool. Yeah, yeah.
And they went to the same school that I went to, you know, that, like, this is the, you know, just about the coolest thing that's ever come out of Reston.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they really pulled it off. You know, it was great.
And, you know, I never got to see them play Jam for Man. But Jam for Man was something that continued on, you know, after you guys had started it and continued throughout, like, my high school years, too.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I noticed that there's a ton of bands that you've been interviewing that I've never even heard of, so it's great that it continued.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, I mean, when I think back on it, you know, the early part of that Reston scene was, I don't know, man, I mean, it was pretty powerful and unique stuff, you know? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It was a lot of fun, and it was a very diverse set of bands too. I mean, we weren't all just playing, you know, hardcore punk. I mean, there was definitely, you know, Psychotic Symptoms had a metal tinge to them, and, you know, LDK had that sort of California adolescence and RKL thing going, and I'm not exactly sure what. I think Remission was a little bit more, you know, in the DC, you know, the later DC bands realm, but we were all totally different, but we all played together and enjoyed that, you know?
Well, everybody always attributes, you know, sort of everything that came after in terms of rest and hardcore to Hostile Environment and LDK.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Really, people say that, you know, every party that you went to and rested at that time had either a Hostile Environment or LDK playing or both.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, we did play a good bit of those shows, you know, from our generation. I mean, there was, you know, there were a couple bands before us, but we didn't really have a connection to those bands. A little bit, maybe, with there was a band called Foundation. I don't know if you're familiar with those guys, but they were kind of like from that Pudwack and Jesus Freak days. Some of those guys were. And they ended up being in another band after Foundation. Some of those guys were in a band called Repercussion that played at some of those Jam for Man shows.
Right. So I Mike Davis and Davis White.
Yeah.
We're part of those. And Dave Allen was part of Foundation, too.
Right, right. And another guy, I don't think Dave wasn't in. And those guys formed another band later on called Branch Manager that Ron
Winters.
And, huh?
Ron Winters.
Yeah, Ron and Dave were in that band. those guys were awesome, man. I saw them in Chicago a few times, and they stayed at my house when they used to come through town when I lived in Chicago. I kept in touch with Ron for a little while, but we've lost touch since. But yeah, they were a great band too. They were actually on Discord Records at one point too.
Yeah. Yeah. And play Jam for Man, I believe.
Oh, Branch Manager did?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay.
I somebody said that they played on a bill with Branch Manager at a Jam for Man.
I believe it. And it might have been one that I played too, and I'm just not remembering it right, you know? It all gets jumbled together. Well, the other cool thing about the early scene was just that, you know, it was so innocent. I mean, we didn't have any, there was no desire to get big, you know, we just were doing it, you know? And I mean, I love that part of it. That there was, we were just doing it because we loved doing it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Although, you know, it's cool that those bands did get a chance to get heard outside of Reston too.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
You know? And in some respects it's a shame that, you know, a band like Remission, let's say, almost missed its calling being like a little early.
Oh, you think?
To some extent.
Okay.
I think Remission could have rode, you know, the wave later on of alternative rock, and
yeah.
You know, and put out a few more albums.
Yeah. I don't know. We were kids, though. We were just having fun, you know? I mean, if you think about it, really, like, when Hostile Environment started, I think I was probably 14 years old, you know? So think about that. I mean, we didn't have any, there was no method of, like, you know, making albums. We used to Joe Banks recorded us, and we would just take a boombox that had two tape decks on it, a bunch of blank tapes, and a bunch of Xerox copies, and we would literally just make copies of a tape, and, you know, sell them for a few dollars or give them away to our friends. I mean, you know.
Punk rock.
Yeah, man, it was great. You know, I mean, I love that. I feel like that concept, even if, you know, I feel like that idea of do-it-yourself stayed with me throughout my life, if that makes any sense. I mean, that's the thing I think of that from those days that have stuck with me for my whole life is do-it-yourself. If you want to get it done, then go do it. You know what I mean?
Well, how do you apply that now?
Well, you know, I mean, I run my own business. You know, I mean, I have a small remodeling contracting business. And, you know, I mean, I run it myself. It's my business. And I try to do it with, you know, care for my employees and respect for them. you know, my idea of success with that business isn't necessarily me making the most money, you know? And I feel like the fairness, you know, just trying to be fair, and my attempt to be fair in life stems from the DIY aspect of punk rock. Does that make sense? That might be going a little too deep into it, but
I think that is spot on.
Yeah.
But you know, you seem to find something else, I guess, in Richmond. Right? I mean, when you got there, you've stuck around there for this amount of time.
Yeah. Well, I moved down here, and then I left for a little while, moved to Chicago, and then back to Richmond. Man, I love Richmond. I love it down here.
Like somewhat of you know, a like-minded community there.
Yeah, I mean, I think I did. I mean, you know, when I moved to Chicago, I went to film school there. And trying to get films made in a big city like that was tough. And then when I moved back to Richmond, you know, I ended up going back to film school here, and there was like 9 or 10 of us in this class, and we had this shitty equipment, and excuse my language there. I'm sorry about that. You know, and we worked hard at it, much like we did in Reston. You know, we sort of all worked together and got the thing done. And, you know, so I guess I find that same sort of, you know, rest in punk rock attitude in Richmond to some extent, you know. And I do like it down here. It's a great, you know, it's got a nice little inner city that's growing. We live in a little neighborhood right outside of the city called Lakeside. Yeah, I do. I love Richmond, man. It's a great little town. Yeah.
And good music still there?
You know, to be honest, I'm not that involved in music around here anymore. You know, when I first moved here with Avail, and then after that, I was involved in the music scene around here. And man, there were some great bands at the time, but. You know, I'm pretty out of the music scene, to be honest. Right now.
What were the bands that that made up that scene that you guys kind of moved into the couple time around?
Yeah, so when I moved down here with the Avail, and then we broke up, and there were some guys from Manassas, and I think these guys played one of the Jam for Man, that one of the later Jam for Mans. The band was called Hugal, which is laugh backwards. And they were from Manassas. A guy named John Parton and John Skaritza. And those guys started a band down here in Richmond called Ho's Got Cable. And they were my roommates. And they were a great band down here. And they played some shows at the Vale. We'll be right back. And who else? T-Pone. Man, it's been a while.
T-Pone,
yeah. You ever heard of them?
No. What was T-Pone?
T-Pone was actually the guy who plays drums for Avail now, or at the end of Avail. His name is Ed Trask, and he played drums in T-Pone with a guy named Michael Bishop, who was in a band from Richmond called Gwars. I don't know if you've ever heard of that band. You probably have.
Gwars.
Yeah, and so Michael had a little side project called T-Pone, and Ed was the drummer. They were a great band. Hose Got Cable played a bunch of shows with them. And, man, there was some great band. Huh?
Do you guys cross over with Gwar at all?
Hose Got Cable opened up for them once, or a couple of times. But opening up for Gwar was kind of difficult because Gwar fans just want to see Gwar. They don't care about who's opening up, you know what I mean? They just want to get blood squirted on them, fake blood.
I was going to say, better to open up than follow.
Yeah, no, you definitely couldn't follow them. The place was trashed when they were done. But there was some other bands like Breadwinner. Richmond had an interesting, like, instrumental kind of math rock thing going. And there was a great band called Breadwinner, The Alternatives. I don't know, tons of bands.
when you went to Chicago, see, I've never heard this this about you as a filmmaker. I didn't realize that was, you know, something that you were interested in.
Yeah, when I have a degree in filmmaking and creative writing. But I never really did anything with it, so, you know. But I moved to Chicago and went to film school there, played a little bit of music, nothing you would have ever heard of. And then ended up coming back down here to Richmond, and I got a degree from VCU in filmmaking and creative writing, and, you know, built some movie sets and stuff like that, and that led to remodeling.
did you make any short films?
I made a couple little films, but I never, you know, nobody ever really saw them. I made one called Dishwasher, and then one called Blaze. And one more, I can't remember what we called that one, but nothing ever came of any of it. I can never make that connection between, you know, I don't know, money and art, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes a lot of sense. I sometimes feel the same way.
Sort of lost interest in making art when I had to try to maybe connect the money to it, you know?
Right. No. Mm-hmm. I know exactly. I think we're like-minded in that respect. I also have a degree in creative writing and a minor in film studies.
Oh, okay, okay.
And, you know, that's part of how I wound up out here in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay, okay. And that may sound like a cop-out. I don't mean it to be a cop-out. It's just, you know, sometimes your interests just change, you know?
Well, some of the one of the funny aspects of that is, like, you know, you were doing that at a time that was probably right before there were as many outlets as there were later on, you know?
Yes, yes, you're right.
A huge outlet for filmmakers, Vimeo, I mean, all these places now that you can get your films to, and there also weren't as many festivals, you know, for films as there are today.
That's true. That's true. I was in, you know, my senior year in college, we were just starting to shoot stuff on, like, on video and have it look decent, you know? And that was kind of a new thing at the time. We were able to shoot on video, which, you know, made it cheap for sure, which, you know, was nice because shooting on film was expensive.
Well, I'm surprised that you didn't get involved with making, you know, music videos and things for your friend's band, considering your background in music and in film.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't know. The film sort of came after the music. You know?
Right. But film is always, you know, highly influenced by music also.
Yeah, yeah. Most of my filmmaking stuff was more connected to short story writing and things like that. So I was more interested in telling stories, I think, with movies than connecting it with, you know, with songs, if that makes any sense.
You should throw those up on YouTube now.
Oh, man. I'd have to figure out how to transfer them from whatever old... Yeah, yeah, maybe I'll do that one day. I've got some old HD, like, you know, those little mini HD tapes that they used to make?
Yeah.
I don't know if they still make those cameras anymore, but that's what my films are on. I'd have to try to dig them up. I've never, you know, it's been interesting listening to the jam, the podcast that you've put out, because if I regret anything, it's being such a poor documenter of things that I've done, you know, because I had to get some HE music, some hostile environment music and some of those things from you. I mean, I don't have any documents of any of that art that I ever made, because I've just been a poor collector. I've never been a good collector. I just want to make the stuff, and then, you know, and then I don't keep it around, if that makes any sense. I mean, I don't know why I've done that. If I could go back and do anything different, I would have, you know, kept and documented some of that stuff better than I did.
You know, if you're going to put all that effort into it, you know, enjoy the final product too. And I love going back and listening to my own music. I know that it's really severely uncool to say.
No, it's funny. When you sent me that Remission stuff, I listened to it a couple of times. And a couple of those songs, like, stuck in my head for a couple of weeks after that. And it was really funny how quickly the lyrics just came right back to me, you know. And they were connected with some cool memories, and the songs, you know, we wrote a couple of catchy songs. I mean, some of those songs are pretty good, you know?
Yeah. Were you involved with writing any of the lyrics?
No, Dave wrote all the lyrics. I just knew them, you know, from listening to it, you know, but unfortunately I was involved in writing some of the lyrics for Hostile Environment that were really, it's funny, 'cause listening to the Hostile Environment stuff, Ben wrote a lot of those lyrics also, and the songs that Ben wrote are the ones with the good lyrics. The ones with the crappy lyrics are the ones that I wrote. Some of them are pretty embarrassing, but I'll chalk it up to being 14 and 15 years old, you know?
Well, luckily the recordings are so bad for the most part that you can barely understand the lyrics.
There we go. There we go. That's exactly what I need. 'Cause some of those lyrics were pretty atrocious. I wasn't much of a singer.
I mean, what do you want a 14-year-old kid to be able to sing about? You know?
Yeah, no, you're right. No, I hear you. But and some of it was definitely cringeworthy, you know. But that's all right. The energy was there.
I think that there are a couple of really good Hostile Environment songs. And I like the Hostile Environment theme song. Maybe.
Yeah, that's one that's exactly what I'm talking about. See, Ben wrote that. Ben wrote the lyrics to that one.
It's catchy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a catchy tune for sure. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, basically, like, you know, you can form a band around that.
That's what we did, you know. That's what we did. We knew about six chords, and we wrote six or eight songs out of those chords, you know. We'll be right back.
you had a plan.
Yeah.
Or not, but you know, you guys had a thing, and it was able to evolve from that. Like, the funny idea is almost you had the idea of a band before you had the band.
Yeah. Well, we just knew we wanted to do that, you know? I mean, we would listen to, you know, listen to that, those early, like, teen idols and early DC punk rock bands. And, you know, it's like, I think we could do that. Let's give it a shot, you know? So we just started doing it, you know? And,
yeah.
And I'm glad we did. It was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun.
What's the Remission song that sticks in your head most? Listening back.
Oh, man. I don't even know what the name of it is. Lyrics are like, please forgive me, or something like that. I think it's called Watch Me Now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the one that stuck in my head the most.
That I think is somewhat like the Remission, like, you know, that's the Remission hit song.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The Remission tape, you guys did, like, sort of officially put out a tape, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, that one is called Fix?
Yes.
And who did the artwork and stuff?
Dave did the artwork on that.
That it's cool.
Yeah, yeah. Dave did some pretty neat artwork. Yeah.
And I think if you go on, because some of the ways that I've tracked down some of the information, maybe I'm giving away my state secrets on this, but if you go on, I think it's bandtoband.com.
Okay.
And if you go on discogs.com, both of those, I believe, have your album and the group members and stuff listed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay. Maybe I'll have to check into that.
I mean, there are certain things where it's like, you know, I mean, it's funny if it's not there digitally, like sometimes it's hard to even know that it existed.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah, I'm surprised it's documented, you know? I mean, you know, I appreciate you doing this because it's I bet it's been a blast for some of the guys from back in the day to listen to this, you know? I'm not sure. Say again?
I hope so.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'm sure there's a bunch of guys listening to it that appreciate it, guys and girls.
And I know that there are probably a lot of them that are like, who the fuck is this guy, Andy, you know, to do this? And so they're like, who is this guy? What, you know, why is he doing this?
Right, right. Nah, okay. Mostly I think people probably just appreciate it.
I think it just comes from loving Jam for Man, loving music, having this, like, rest in pride, you know, and just kind of wanting this thing that I observed somewhat from afar, you know, that seemed so cool, be really, really documented.
Yeah, yeah.
But in a way that it was never captured before.
Yep. Yeah, well, I think, I'm sure some folks out there appreciate it for sure.
Or at least not all in one place, you know. And I've got to give Brian Stewart a lot of credit for that too. You know, even the idea that, you know, like our shows are getting busted up by the cops in these garages and basements and stuff. What, you know, how can we throw our own show? We can't, you know, the Discord label or whatever, the 930 Club, isn't ready to let us 14-year-olds and 15-year-olds play a show. where are we going to throw a show?
Yeah, yeah.
Throw that?
It's pretty great. I mean, it's pretty unique that they let a bunch of scraggly punkers in there and 500 kids to follow, you know, to play these shows, you know.
Yeah, they never should have let that happen.
I mean, it's funny, you know, because growing up in Reston, you know, early, I don't know if you have you ever seen that. I think there was somebody made some T-shirts that said, "In Reston, no one can hear you scream." that came from the punks before our little scene, you know. That was more from the Jesus Freaks and Pudwack scene, I think. But you know, there, I don't know, there was sort of a sense of like Reston was this place that was oppressive, you know, to us white suburban kids, you know. And I think in retrospect, when I look back on it, it was a pretty great place to be, you know, with all the pathways wandering through the woods and the tunnels to hang out in, and, you know, this community center that somehow let us do this, you know, these punk rock shows, you know, that's pretty cool stuff in retrospect, you know, whereas at the time I felt like Reston was this, you know, oppressive place, but I think I just kind of wanted to be oppressed because I wanted to be punk rock, you know.
I think that it can, both things can be true at the same time.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, we definitely got hassled by some cops and stuff hanging out at South Lakes Village Center. There's no doubt about that.
Yes, and South Lakes itself is a school, you know, looks like a jail.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
You know, a lot of the time.
Right, right. But, you know, when I look back now, I mean, I don't know. We had it pretty damn good, if you ask me.